This is OTB Sports Radio.
When Matt Busby signed me, I joined a club with three European footballs a year, a World Cup winner. Unbelievable to play with Busby. Matt Busby management was incredible. He picked players like a jigsaw puzzle. He didn't pressurise you. Go out and enjoy yourself. He never swore. Matt Busby never swore. Can you imagine that from a manager today? He never swore.
Off the Ball, Saturdays from 1 on OTB Sports Radio. Listen live on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Podcast Network.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power.
Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game.
Gamble responsibly. See dunluey.net.
Welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to 5 o'clock, talking about the beautiful game, with thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie. We're joined this week by David Myler, the former Republic of Ireland international, and Johnny Ward, the broadcaster and journalist. Dan McDonnell from the Irish Independent will join us a little bit later on. You can text us 53106. You can tweet us at Off the Ball. As well as listening to us on News Talk, you can watch us on the social channels for Off the Ball. For Periscope on Twitter, at Off the Ball, on Facebook, on YouTube, on the OTB Sports app. If you have not downloaded that already, you can do so by searching for OTB Sports in your app store. Good afternoon, lads. Hope you're well. I just want to get to the panel that we had today first. If you missed any of the Saturday panel, which was on the subject of racism in sport and in society, you can check out the podcast of our important discussion with Darren Randolph, the Republic of Ireland goalkeeper, Jason Sherlock, the former All-Ireland winner with Dublin and Gaelic football, and Des Tomlinson of the FAI, on the OTB Sports app or wherever you get your pods. We've been getting some messages in on the panel, and I'm going to put one of these points to David at the start of the football conversation. This is a text in from Nicole in Dublin. This is such an important discussion. Really vital to hear the experiences of the lads had growing up. If my child spoke to anyone the way Darren has been spoken to, then I failed as a parent. My little fella loves Darren Randolph, his favourite goalkeeper in the world, and he's getting upset thinking about anyone being mean to him because he's got a different skin colour. This kind of discussion should happen in schools. That is from Nicole. Important discussion. Thank you to Jason, Darren and Des for sharing their experiences. I lived in Africa and Asia as a kid / teen coming back to Ireland in the 80s. The ignorance and complacency around race was staggering. The only reason attitudes weren't more obvious was because there were so few others to become targets. As Irish society has thankfully diversified, the poison comes out more clearly and frequently. More complacency is not the answer. Facing up to who we are as a society and acting is from Ian in Dublin, texting in on 53106. If you want to add to the conversation, you can. Brendan Ogle on Twitter, the attacks on James McLean are racist. Anti-Irish abuse is racist abuse. The irony is that some fans who will rightly defend James will themselves be racist when it comes to colour and ethnicity. This is how to highlight how ignorant hashtag racism is, from Brendan Ogle on Twitter there. David, you played with black footballers in England. To what depth, when you were playing, did you see racism embedded in the game?
It's everywhere. Even from my early stages of under 21 football and with Ireland, and that you could go to various different countries and you'd see it. Certain parts of Eastern Europe. Of course, then with the certain stadiums in England, there are certain people who are, you know, do like to racially abuse players. It's a serious problem. You even look at Thursday night in the Europa League with the Rangers player Glenn Kamara, and of course Kamara Roof after the tackle, and his social media being racially abused. It's everywhere. I didn't hear Darren's piece earlier. I'll listen to it later on. But there's no room for it. It needs to be eradicated. But at the same time, I have no idea how we go about doing this, because we're all calling for change, but there doesn't seem to be much happening. You know, these incidents are still happening, which is simply isn't good enough. I have no idea how, you know, a black player will feel when he's racially abused. But there needs to be more, you know, more done about it. I don't know how they're going to go about it. We can talk about education, but it's nearly buried into some people's culture that they feel that it's acceptable, but it's not.
You've spoken eloquently about online abuse before on the programme here, David. It is evident that from what Darren and Jason said, and I know you didn't hear, and Johnny, that we're not immune from this here. Just to give an example, I'm pretty disgusted. We got a vile racist text in during the panel.
Yeah, Yeah, it's a sad state of affairs, you know, JD, and it's I haven't heard the panel either, but I guess it's stuff that we've all heard before. You know, the James McLean stuff is disgusting. I think social media has, you know, I wrote about how great social media has been for the League of Ireland this week and the ability to, you know, promote your product and your club and good goals and all that to an audience essentially for free. But obviously that untrammeled, you know, access of information and so forth can have its negative consequence as well. So we had that situation where, you know, Ian Wright was racially abused by a teenager in Ireland this year, and obviously that went to court. And you know, it kind of brought, I suppose, to the fore just what goes on. It's sickening. It's sickening what's going on social media. But I would be somewhat positive as well in terms of this country. You know, we've had a dramatic social revolution since I was a child, which isn't that long ago. You know, when I went to school, it was basically all white Catholics and so forth, whereas now, that was in East Galway, whereas now if you look at, say, every League of Ireland, literally almost every League of Ireland team, so that's under 13, under 15, under 17, under 19, multiplied by the 20 teams in the League of Ireland, they all have mixed race kids, and, you know, these sons and daughters of immigrants are punching way above their weight on the sporting field, and I've been one of the greatest joys I've gotten in sport in recent years is watching young kids of different kind of racial backgrounds doing so well for Ireland underage. Nadia Power is a fantastic story, I think. I think she could be a star for that generation of Irish who grew up maybe with a parent from Ireland and a parent who was born elsewhere or so forth. And we've a massive population in this country now. I think roughly 1/6 of the population, if not 1/5 of the population on the island of Ireland, weren't born here. And the diversification has been unbelievably beneficial for life on this island in general. You know, and even anecdotally, the non-nationals that have come to this country that I meet in Dublin, I'm always just really taken aback by how warm they are and how friendly they are. And, you know, we're supposed to be the land of the welcomes, but Ireland has been, you know, greatly helped by diversity and so forth. And I think our football team, and Dave is going to agree with me here, is going to be a lot better in time because we have influences outside of Ireland coming into it in terms of the kids that are coming in. And racism sickens me. I do think in this country, you know, we shouldn't be all complacent about it, because I think our attitude towards travellers in this country is inherently racist as well. And I would take that issue with that issue. But by and large, I'd hope that we're a tolerant people. And, you know, I would hope that as the years go on and kids grow up more and more with kids from different backgrounds and of different skin colours, that they just won't know the difference between black and white. And maybe we'll strive towards that in my lifetime, please God.
I think people are inherently good, and this, and everywhere you go, and the majority of people are decent, honest, and kind and caring people. When I was listening to the panel, and Darren Randolph was talking about the abuse he received on a constant basis, and this is at a time when Paul McGrath is the most revered and loved, you know, footballer in the country. It was stark to hear, and Darren gets a lot of messages, and he doesn't feel that. You know, the situation has really progressed. Did you feel or see in dressing rooms, David, black players being affected by or getting to them, you know, what had happened to them?
Of course. It's only natural, isn't it? If somebody comes after you because of the colour of your skin, not only reference you, but it references your family. Like, as even Johnny was saying there, maybe you have an Irish parent and a parent from a different country or whatever, or both your parents are immigrants, in the sense that it does not only just affect you, it affects your family, and of course it's going to affect players. You know, that's those, you know, hateful comments, they cut right to the bone. They're going to affect you. You know, you start to, it does take its toll on you. Like, it's something, the problem is, I find anyway, is you will find a lot of footballers, I'm only going to speak on behalf of footballers, but a lot won't, you know, talk out. One, because they probably aren't educated enough on it. And two, they don't want to suffer any consequences. Kind of like, well, you're not the one going through it. How do you know? It is a very difficult thing, but the more conversations we have, the more awareness we bring to the situation and the topic, you're hoping that we can move forward. Because as Darren said, this has been ongoing for a long time. Nothing has changed. And that's the problem. I think if you ask any, you know, black footballer in England, they probably still feel it's the same. If they've been playing for a long time in England, they probably still feel it's the same 10 years ago as it is now. And that is the problem. We look at even the instance of, you know, taking the knee before a game, that started out before at about, I don't know what it was, 40 seconds to a minute. Now it's only 6 or 7. And you see, you know, with Wilfried Zaha saying, well, I'm not doing it anymore. He's got a valid point because nothing has progressed. Nothing has moved on. That's where, this is where the authorities, the ones in charge, the one who, you know, make the calls, they need to, what do we need to do next? You know, that's the big thing because, look, we all know it. Like, if you turn on any Premier League game on a Saturday and they go to take the knee, it's a token gesture now. Like, the question I'd ask is, what is next? Because that was good at the start to raise awareness, but you need to see action from it. And at the moment, there's not enough happening.
Yeah, it's a little bit deflating, isn't it, when we hear, I suppose, the air coming out of that to a degree. And that, I just think that social media... There's got to be some kind of regulation around accounts. Like, to me, that has to happen, because there's a difference between free speech and hate speech, and hate speech needs to be properly regulated by social media companies and governments. Like, that is just obvious thing for me.
Yeah, like, I honestly could say, like, I've been watching games since I was, whatever, about 10 years of age. The course of 30 years I've been going to games in some shape or form, and I don't think I've ever experienced racism on the terraces of any description. I genuinely mean that. But social media is different, because we now have a situation where the internet is, you know, it's been around now, I suppose, for most of us for 15, 20 years. There are a lot of sad individuals out there, and they spend a lot of time on the internet where they can meet, shall we say, like minded individuals. And, you know, the Journal did an investigation. I didn't read it now, but I just saw it on the app. They were doing an investigation into the rise of the far right in Ireland and so forth. And I wonder, is there a rise of the far right, or is it just now the internet can bring these sad individuals together where they see that they can, you know, basically abuse people from the comfort of a keyboard, which I don't think they would do on the terrace, because I think it's a completely different form of abuse and it's cowardly. But there are a lot of sad individuals out there who somehow think that it's okay to racially abuse someone on social media. And I agree with you, Jay. This does need to be confronted. I'd like to see jail terms given to people who do stuff like that, because I think it's so hurtful. It's really damaging for the person involved. And what James McLean had to deal with, I mean, definitely, you know, you should get jail terms for some of the abuse that he's had, bullets in the post and stuff like that. How anyone can think that's acceptable behaviour is incredible.
I would have heard really disgusting things said about Arsene Wenger at Spurs games. David, would you have ever, like, we've heard, we obviously, you know, this is not racism per se, but we've, you know, the Hillsborough and the Munich stuff at Liverpool and Man United games. Would you have experienced racism from the terraces at all when you're playing?
Had one occasion. Okay, we played Millwall, and we had a lad, Diamande, a black lad from Norway, and he was racially abused several times. Luckily enough, in that instance, it didn't really affect him. He took it in his stride, kind of like, he was more flabbergasted that somebody had actually said it to him. But even at the time, like, we've seen, you know, Gary Neville talk about that England camp where Ashley Cole was racially abused throughout an entire game. And, like, Gary Neville sat down next to him and said, you know, come on, just focus on the game, focus, whatever. I'd say myself and others in my team, but I can only really talk about myself, I was probably similar, like, just blank it out, put the ball in the back of the net. And that is a problem in its own right mind. That, like, I'm saying to him, like, just concentrate on the game, but he shouldn't be racially abused, you know? I had another incident. We played Brentford away in the Championship. It would have been 2015-16 season. And El Mohammedi, our right back from Egypt or whatever, he was called fairly serious terms. And I was the one who heard it. And I reported to the referee, and the referee ignored me. We had gone through, you know, obviously Kick It Out. I'd come into them. They come into the clubs every year to do this, you know, ongoing meeting and bring up, you know, raise awareness. If something happens from the stands and you're on the pitch, this is, you know, your protocol of what you're meant to do. But even so, the referee ignored me at that time. But like, I have seen it. Yeah, it's happened. You know, the worst thing is a lot of these people think it's funny. You know, when they're in the crowd or whatever and they're shouting at players, and it's not acceptable. As Johnny said there, like, there needs to be severe consequences for their actions, whether that be jail time or whatever, but something needs to happen that we need to find a way to kick it out, really.
Yeah, and you can text us 53106. Let's move on to Football Matters, lads. David, do they need to make a change at Spurs with Jose?
You know what, JD? You were going all right, obviously, until the Europa League game. Must have taken, like, you know, you're going to have those games where you take your eye off the ball and, you know, Arisic gets the hat-trick or whatever. It's just, it's a right kick in the teeth because, you know, Jose is obviously there to deliver silverware. That was the whole kind of thing of bringing him in. I think, like, you've got the League Cup. Obviously, that, albeit that's going to be very difficult to beat Manchester City, but I don't know. It's like a case of if you replace him, who do you get in?
Yeah, they were saying
now
that.
What managers are available?
Yeah. Let's hear a bit from Hugo Lloris speaking passionately after that defeat to Zagreb.
I think we are all more than disappointed. It's just a disgrace. I just hope everyone in the changing room feel responsible of the situation because it's a disgrace. Now, what can I say more about it? Talking about the game of Sunday, I think it's not the right moment. The taste of the defeat tonight is just more than painful, and we are all responsible of that.
Which hurts more, Hugo? Arsenal at the weekend or this one tonight?
It's just the accumulation. Obviously, we are a club with full of ambition, but I just think that the team at the moment is just the reflect of what's going on in the club. We have lack of basics, lack of fundamental, and all our performance is just in relation of that, you know. I think mentally we should be stronger, we should be more competitive. Today I didn't feel that on the field, unfortunately. You know, when you are not ready at this level, you pay straight away, and doesn't matter who is the opponent. There is quality everywhere in Europe, and if you don't respect the opponent, it's kind of a punition, and that's what happened today. I think the full credit belong to the opponent as well, because they play the game with full of belief, but the blame is on us, all the team, all the club. We are guilty.
Well, anybody who's watching there, on the caption it said Nathan Murphy, under the caption of Hugo Lloris. Nathan Murphy sadly is not a World Cup winning captain. Now maybe he'll be lifting the Sam Maguire Cup one day for Mayo, but that was Hugo Lloris that we were hearing from there. David, when dressing rooms go south, what's it like? Because that's what seems to be happening at Spurs at the moment.
Horrible. There's no worse place you'd rather be. Like, when a change room goes, it's just a disaster. If you have 2-3 bad eggs in a change room, they can cause, you know, uproar with their whispering to different players. Oh, I'm not playing. This is wrong. This is wrong. It just creates such a negative atmosphere. It's quite interesting to listen to Lloris there, and he's talking about, you know, the basics and the fundamentals of the club, a reflection of the team. Which obviously, to me, looking, as you said there, as you were quick to highlight, he's a World Cup winner. Maybe he feels that Tottenham aren't ambitious enough to be competing with the other big boys, you know, your Man City's, your Liverpool's, your United's, your Chelsea's. That he feels it's, you know, a bigger problem that, obviously it's another thing, you have to be professional. Felt he wasn't ready. So maybe, like, they've gone into that game with their eye off the ball, kind of like you'd have expected as a Spurs fan, obviously a result or a performance and a reaction after the Arsenal result. But listening to him there, I do find it, if you get a very honest player after a game, you can pick up on a lot of what's going on. You can just tell that a lot of them don't disagree with, I'm not going to say the manager, but they don't disagree with what's going on around the football club. And there's a lot of frustration, because they should have even, you know, comfortably gone through there. But, you know, like, going back to what you said, like, change rooms can be, when they're down and out, that's when you really depend on your characters. And people are quick to, you know, look, I've been asked about him enough time. You always listen to Roy Keane whenever he speaks on Super Sunday, or he speaks about the characters they had in the changing room. They had big, big players in that Manchester United team. You look at Spurs, they don't have big characters. They're very good players, but they're not big characters.
Laura was on recently on the show, and he just mentioned three names when it came to the dressing room at Liverpool. Van Dijk, Milner, Henderson, they run the show. Did you get yourselves out of that dressing room toxicity, David, or is it a case that one thing has to happen or the other thing has to happen? Either the manager has to go, like Chelsea, you see completely revitalised Chelsea now, or that players have to go, certain players have to go, and they completely need to rebuild?
I think you'll... Look, if you get rid of the manager, then the problem isn't necessarily gone. Yes, there will be, you know, two, three individuals who aren't playing. It'd be quick enough if you were to scour through the squad and check minutes. You could find out fairly quickly who's, you know, the bad eggs are. Like, you need to remove them players from the changing room. Like, I can use an example. We had, we signed Hatem Ben Arfa, one of the most gifted players I'd ever played with. But we had to report for training at 10 o'clock. You had to be in before 10 o'clock. Hatem would turn up at 9:50, 9:59. Right? You had to be out in the pitch ready to go at 25 past 10. Hatem would stroll out at 10:24, 59. He wouldn't tie his boots. He'd like saunter around training. Now, this boy was so gifted. But then you had, say, like the likes of, say, myself, McShane, Quinny. We were there every day, grafting, putting in as much effort as we could to try like force our way back into the team or stay in the team, whichever way it was at the time. And he used to just toss sessions off like completely. And it was only, you can actually check it. We played Manchester United away at Old Trafford, and Steve Bruce took him off, took Hatem off after 35 minutes, something around that, 35, 40 minutes. And he, at halftime, he got the stats. Alan McGregor was in goal for us. He had ran more than Hatem Ben Arfa in the first half. He was playing as our creative 10. And I remember Steve Bruce, like, he blew a gasket. He went off it at him. And Hatem just sat there laughing at him. He just sat there laughing at him. And that was kind of like... It's really difficult when you are a manager, because we had been successful with that whole team. But he looked to add, you know, that cherry on top, that bit of something different. Hatem came and he had that something different, but we couldn't find, like, if you listen to players talk, Chelsea players talk about Eden Hazard, never tied his boots when he trained. Before a game, he was the same, would come in last, and like he'd sit there playing Mario Kart before a kickoff, and then he would go out and he'd win the game for Chelsea. And it became like he was that good and he was producing in these performances. Nobody ever said anything, but Hatem wasn't. And then it really started to grind on the lads who weren't. And it turned into, it was like a Monday morning training session after we played on the weekend. And the lads who hadn't played were like, obviously going through their paces. We're getting a full workout. And then something just cracked between myself and Stephen Quinn, and we lost it and said like, this is whatever. And then that was kind of the issue was raised. And then Hatem was like, eventually it boiled down to Hatem was told he wasn't wanted anymore. We like a lot of the time it's got to come down to the players and the characters you do have in the changing room. They have to iron those problems out, and you can't let it exist in the changing room. Like, as much as you can point fingers at the manager, like whatever team Jose put out on Thursday night, you'd still expect Tottenham to go and win that game. So like, as much as you can say the manager doesn't know what he's doing or he's got this wrong, players have still got to go out and perform and, you know, go and earn their money almost. I think that's like that also, you can tell that in Lloris's interview, that he's frustrated with the performance, not only of himself, but the entire team.
Did Hatem ever deliver? Because I'm
in
sure
training,
if
he did.
I'm sure if he was here, you might have a different view.
Well, no, you can do you know what, JD? If Hatem, I'd nearly ring Hatem now and get him up.
Yeah.
I got on really well with him, but if you're not producing and you're not pulling your weight, then I would be quick to pull you up. I didn't care. If you look at Hatem's stats, he played games. He didn't produce enough for us. We didn't sign the Hatem that at Newcastle that played under Pardew. If you look at the goals he got and the performances he put in, the level he was at, that's why if you look at Hatem, he went off the radar for a while. I think he ended up at Nice. like that was when the, I think he had something that he couldn't play for three clubs in 1 year. There's some unwritten rule or something along those lines. But he had time off, and then he signed for Nice, and he was excellent. And then he got his move to PSG. But look at him now; he's trying to drag PSG through court.
Would you have any designs on becoming a manager, David?
Well, I do, yeah.
I presume like one of the biggest things is character vetting. Like, you're just not going to sign a player that has the potential to do this. I mean, and your card is surely marked. I mean, it's more important to have the 8 out of 10 player who give you 10 out of 10 instead of having several 9 out of 10 players who just don't care.
I agree with you, but at the same time, like, there's probably a bit I look at Steve Bruce, captain Manchester United to league titles, everything, been in big change rooms with big characters. Like, I imagine Cantona probably never tried his hardest every day of the week, but then they'll all turn to go, Cantona turned up on, you know, on a game day and performed. So I think there's probably a case for certain managers. Like, another one I had was Abel Hernandez, striker at Hull. No interest in training. Wouldn't go in the gym. We'd come in late, leave early. But I think he got us 26 goals in the championship. He inevitably got us promoted. So, like, he got the rub of the green because he performed. If you look at any change room, there will be those players. But, like, it's a tough one, Johnny, because sometimes those players are the mavericks. They can produce. Like, if the example that's just popped into my head is you look at QPR and Tarapt. Mm-hmm. He was, like, that year in the championship, he was just unplayable. But he's meant to be a disaster as well. He supposedly...
Scandalous mentality.
Yes. But there was a big, massive rumour that Warnock would play him on a Saturday and he'd say, go home till Friday. Like, back, I think he's Moroccan. But he would fly home, or if his family lived in France or something, he would fly home and turn up on a Friday morning. It was like, just get out of my hair, go away.
Is
that bad management or is that very good man management? Because he performed for him and he produced. So it's like so difficult.
It's mad that some players just wouldn't put it in, David. Like, it was so hard for you and for your fellow Irish players to make it. And then you have got somebody who's so talented, like Hatem, as you're saying there, that didn't fully put it in, and then it didn't work out for them. It's hard to comprehend. Maybe it got too easy for some players.
But that was the thing. Like, Hatem could, like, he used to, when we'd walk out towards training, he'd just suddenly go like, oh, I'm going to nutmeg you in today. And, like, he'd just get the ball and he'd start dribbling and he'd just fly. He'd go past five or six. He'd take it around the goalkeeper. He'd have an empty net and he'd take it back to go around the defender again just to laugh at everyone. And you'd like, I'm looking at myself like, and I probably got my boots on my wrong feet. Do you know what I mean? And I can't make a pass, but then this fella is just so gifted. And it's frustrating, yeah. But, like, at the same time, I look at it differently. I think you're wasting your talent. Because if you're here playing with me and I don't have an ounce of your talent, and I've worked that hard to get here, imagine if you'd worked as hard as I did, where you'd be. Because I'd often say that to, like, someone like Hatem, like, I'd be playing for Real Madrid if I had your ability. If I had your ability and my mentality, I'd be playing for Real Madrid. I wouldn't be sitting here in the change room with you.
Maybe he just didn't care enough.
No, he didn't. He used to go around talking about, if I have this much money in my bank account, I'm retiring. That was his... People have different mentalities. That's why I think you never really find any Irish player, probably British player, tosses it off, because they know how privileged they are to be playing and how hard it is to get to the level they're at. But they don't want to give it up. They fight for it.
Harry Kane is an important figure now in Spurs in that dressing room, isn't he, at the moment?
Yeah, but I like Harry Kane, but Harry Kane cares about Harry Kane.
Yeah.
Harry Kane will look after Harry Kane. Whereas if you look at other captains of other teams, it's the team first. Like, you see the Arsenal one, the incident with Harry Kane and the elbow on Gabriel. That's not Harry Kane, is it? That's a frustration at the way like the team are playing. You know, Harry Kane wants to be the main man. I have no problem with that. You can tell he's frustrated by the way Spurs are playing, the way they go about their business. They're very defensive. That's not, you know, the way he wants them to play. So I wouldn't be surprised, JD, if he was knocking on doors come the summer.
Yeah, absolutely. I asked people on Twitter what they thought of Mourinho, whether he should stay or go. Spurs fans, 53106, should Mourinho remain? Do you want him to stay or do you want him to depart? Viv O'Connor, Spurs fan, John, it's not Jose's the real problem. It's certain players not performing because they believe they're better than they actually are. Yes, Jose picks the team, but after the last two performances, it's very clear who the ones causing trouble are. Kevin Regan, essentially the same group of players who've now failed under two top managers. The players lack the mentality to win big matches. Changing the manager will just kick the can down the road. The squad needs a rebuild now, which is what Pochettino said 2 years ago. Craig Dupuyre, let Levy's legacy be the stadium and training ground. Time for Joe Lewis and Enoch to sell up. Otherwise, Jose would be better off trying his hand at international football. Johnny, I think it's quite sad about Jose, really. This guy was box office every single week, but it was 15, 16 years ago now, in a Real Madrid dressing room, got a record points total in La Liga, and now you're scrambling at Spurs. It's quite a decline.
Yeah, I think you've kind of hit the nail on the head there. It is kind of sad to see, because as much as, you know, he's an abrasive character, and, you know, we wouldn't be everyone's cup of tea, even, I guess, as a player or a rival manager. You know, what he's done in the game from where he came and how he would set up his teams tactically, particularly against better opposition, and, you know, inculcating that siege mentality in dress rooms that was, you know, for so long, so effective. Yeah, it is, because I guess the outburst after the game during the week was sort of the outburst of an increasingly beaten man, really. And, you know, I think, from the outside looking in, I would subscribe to the general notion that the game has kind of passed him by. And, you know, you hear those rumours of the Spurs players relying on sort of attacking techniques that were essentially Pochettino's kind of coaching on the training ground back in the day, that Mourinho just doesn't focus enough on attacking plays, and it's more about cutting out mistakes and not giving goals away. But I don't know if you know, his training methods, they've probably passed him out, and I don't know where his next big job is going to be after this, because it was a risky one for Spurs, I think, to take him on. It's not a major surprise that it hasn't really worked out, and, you know, it'd be interesting if fans were actually at the game now, what the atmosphere would be like, because they're still in with a bit of a shout at the top four. But, you know, that's, I think what David said there, that elbow by Kane, that's so uncharacteristic that it does kind of it does symbolise that there's something wrong there. And I think you don't lose the two-goal lead like they did the other night against a team of that calibre without there being something wrong. And yeah, most political careers end in failure, you know, maybe managers end in failure as well, but his failure looks like it might happen a bit sooner than you would have expected, considering the genius that he for long appeared to be.
13 million sterling he's on a year. So we've got sympathy for him, but not that much sympathy. I think Daniel Levy gambled and he got the gamble wrong. He should have given Pochettino the money. Obviously, they built an amazing stadium and training ground there, David. But the brand is good, but the results on the pitch are not. And is there a sense from you that he's yesterday's man? And Miguel Delaney, who's often on the show, who writes for The Independent, has always been writing about the fact that there is a general consensus that Mourinho is not a great attacking coach. He's a very good manager, but as a coach, there's a difference between the two. Do you get the sense that there are now managers like Nagelsmann, who's been linked with the job, and Tuchel, what he's doing at Chelsea at the moment, and Pep and Jurgen, that are now today's men, and Jose's a little bit in the rearview mirror?
Oh, yeah, it's a bit harsh, no? Of course, look, it's not been fantastic, his last few jobs, in the sense of Spurs aren't high and flying, knocking on the door. Okay, United still won trophies there, but, like, his record is unbelievable. You know, obviously, I do read a lot of Miguel's stuff, like, but you can't say he's not an attacking coach. Like, you know, for what he's won with Porto, Inter Milan, Real Madrid, Chelsea, everywhere, you know what I mean? He's won trophies everywhere. He's won. Yeah, you can. But the thing is, they'll say, like, you ask any footballer, attackers win you games, defenses win you, like, league titles, trophies. So, obviously, he feels that there's a problem with Tottenham defensively. And until he gets that right, he won't adapt and change. Maybe it is a case of he is stubborn in his own ways that, yeah, you know, he's not willing to change a few things. In the sense that, like, he's been so successful in the past, he says, well, this method has worked at Chelsea, it's worked at Porto, it's worked at Real Madrid, this is what we're going to do. maybe he does need to alter it a little bit. But to say, I wouldn't say he's yesterday's man, though. Of course, look, that spark in him that he had in the early days, if you remember, he was box office when he came to Chelsea. Like, he had everyone on the tip of his finger. Everyone was fascinated by every post-match interview, everything. Maybe he has lost a bit of his spark, but I wouldn't say he's yesterday's man, though.
Okay, got to take a break, David. Thanks so much for such brilliant insight there. And Johnny, we're going to come back after the break and talk about the Champions League draw and Manchester United. Don't go away.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power.
Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game.
Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
Welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you 3 to 5 o'clock, talking about the beautiful game with thanks to Paddy Power. For more information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie. Joined today by David Myler, the former Republic of Ireland international and the broadcaster and journalist Johnny Ward. Dan McDonald is with us after 4 o'clock. Now, don't forget on next week's Paddy Power half hour, we're continuing with our new segment, Near Miss, which is aimed at allowing you to reclaim a losing bet. If you've had a single bet or an accumulator that's fallen down because of a dodgy VAR decision, someone's armpit was offside or a player's taken a dive, just before you fling your phone at the wall, take a screen grab of your losing bet. Be sure to include your bet slip ID and then just send it in to us either using the PP Near Miss hashtag on Twitter, hit us with a DM on Instagram, or send your snap to us on WhatsApp on 0879 180 180. We'll do the rest. We'll announce the selected winners every Friday at the end of the Paddy Power half hour. You can see all the T's and C's on otbsports.com. Stay tuned to our OTB social accounts for more. And listeners, you can text us about anything in football to 53106. Fascinating listening about Ben Arfa. This is a top class show. Thanks for all the decent output through lockdown, says Jay in Walkinstown. Did you have a good week in the end, David Myler at Cheltenham?
Oh, JD, you were flying the first couple of days.
Yeah.
I don't know what Tuesday, Wednesday.
Show now, yeah.
Tuesday, Wednesday did all right. Thursday, then I lost half my winnings. So I finished about 120 quid up. I didn't bet yesterday. So I had a couple of non-runners, should I say, Thursday. So
yeah, they're still running.
I had enough. Yeah, they're still running. I had enough then and I just took my 100 quid or 120 quid, something like that. So I'll do me. Thank you very much.
Johnny, did you come out in front? Because on the Cheltenham show yesterday, you had Vanillier, that Gavin Cromwell horse.
I did, yeah. Like, I backed Ireland -6 in the Press Free Cup, basically on Sunday or Monday. So that was my main bet for the week. I actually had a lot of near misses as well. Billaway yesterday, backed on Wallen, backed Ellie May. So not all good stories, but I actually had a very good Cheltenham. So yeah, all good, JD. It was a bizarre week. We spoke about it, just the Irish domination. I mean, it's not good for British racing at all. But it is what it is. And yeah, it was an amazing week, and it was great to cheer on some horses with this ongoing pandemic and so forth.
38 points to 10, Scotland lead Italy in the Six Nations at the moment. Just to let you know, Ross Byrne comes in for the injured Billy Burns on the bench for Ireland against England. Checking in with Andy Dunn a little bit later on. 4:45 kickoff at Lansdowne Road, Ireland and England. In front of an empty stadium, just to let you know as well, Paddy Power, very good to give us 1,167 from the charity winnings. We're going to donate that to the Injured Jockeys Fund from the week at Cheltenham. Just a text in here, 53106. What do the panel think? Madrid happy to have got the weakest of the English teams left in the Champions League. We'll have no fear of them. City and Chelsea much stronger, says Enda in Mayo. How did you feel as a man with a draw for Liverpool, David, about the draw?
Look, once you're into this stage of the Champions League, every team is tough. Of course, look, you'd say Chelsea have got Porto. You'd be thinking, can we avoid Bayern Munich, PSG, those kind of teams? But at the end of the day, if you want to win it, you're going to have to beat two or three ginormous teams. Real Madrid aren't the Real Madrid of old. There's no doubt in that. You know, Zidane was under savage pressure probably around Halloween time. They've managed to turn a corner. They're doing all right, of course. They have great success in the Champions League over the last few years. But Liverpool will probably prefer to play in the Champions League than the Premier League. I think teams will set up to counter-attack Liverpool in the Premier League, whereas the Champions League, like when they go and play Madrid will kind of go, you're playing, like Liverpool, you're playing Real Madrid. You know, we're the best team in this tournament. We're the best team ever to play in this competition. Like, they'll be certain amount of respect, but they'll be like, you know, we'll dominate the game, which then will mean that we'll create spaces. Liverpool won't have that, you know, 9-10 men behind the ball. You saw that against Leipzig. You know, they continue to press Liverpool high, and got caught out in both games. Liverpool should have won by a bigger aggregate score. So I'm actually quite confident. I feel Liverpool will go through. I think Liverpool will beat Madrid. I think it will be kind of like turning point in their season.
Mo Salah and Sergio Ramos 3 years ago, that he bore the brunt of that challenge in the Champions League final. Do players carry that stuff? Does the bite linger, David, when you're going into return clashes with other players?
It depends on the player, doesn't it? Do you think Salah sits at home thinking about it? I don't. Whereas I bet you Sergio Ramos will think about it. Fellas like him will. Fellas like me will. Do you know, and they'll remember certain things like this. You know, I think if you're that type of player, you'll remember it. I don't think Salah, look what's passed in the time he's won the Champions League, he's won the Premier League, won a couple of golden boots, you know. So I don't think Salah's the type that will remember it. But there'd be certain players would remember it. They'd remember incidents from games. You know what I mean? Even if I was to dig out through my career, I remember a great clash I had with Mili Jednak, who used to be captain of Crystal Palace. I remember he nailed me late off the ball and I leapt up and whatever, and I gave him dogs of abuse. And then he took a heavy touch and I nailed him about 6 minutes late. And I said, like, have that. And I think, like, no, we can all back ourselves, but Mili Jednak is 15 stone of muscle, you know what I mean, with a wonderful beard. He was a tough, tough boy. I'll never forget, after the game, he came steaming towards me. And I was thinking, oh God, here we go. And then he just went in his Australian accent, like he said, good game. I enjoyed that battle. And I remember just going like, oh, you are hard, you know. But that was what to call it. I was just thinking like, he's going to have a proper go off me. Because I remember, like, I think I ripped his sock and it's like, I think I did a bit of damage to him. But it was just the way he came up and shook my hand when I enjoyed that battle. And I've, like, ever since that moment, my respect for him has been enormous. You know, there was no begrudging.
David, don't they? Like, his attitude, and he was such a good, like, reliable, hardy player for them, almost from a throwback from another era. Like,
yeah, he was just like, even when he went to Aston Villa, I know he was like at the back end of his career, and then he ended up getting pushed to centre half. But like, he was reliable, but he was just, a brick house. You know what the word I'm missing. That's what he was. He was a monster. And I'll never forget it. He just like shook my hand with a smile. Like, I enjoyed that battle.
There's something of what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas about it, isn't there? There's respect on the pitch in a situation like that, and that you shake hands and it's all over and it's love and war. All is fair.
Oh, yeah. I remember playing against James McCarthy. I think, I'm not sure, was he at Wigan or Everton? And I mean, James would be like good buddies from the Irish camp. And like, James was screaming dogs of abuse at me. However, I think it was a tackle. I tackled one of his teammates or something. He lost the plot. He was screaming. And I was looking, I'm kind of going, hello, James, it is me. Like, and he was like, oh, you, blah, blah, blah. And he was just screaming at me. But that's part and parcel of it. Like, you know, there's a bit of grudging goes on in the pitch. So be it, you get on with it. As long as, like I've said this before, say with myself and McShane, as long as you kind of move on from, you forget about it. I don't, once the final whistle goes, we're all mates, like, you know.
Haaland and Stones and Diaz, so that's going to be something else, isn't it? City, Dortmund.
I think it's almost Detroit. Go on, Johnny.
Sorry, dude. Yeah, it's going to be, I'd agree with you, David. I think Liverpool won't be all that upset with that draw. They'll know they'll create chances against Madrid, but I don't know, JD. We've spoken about Haaland, where he might end up if he came to England. You know, I just think he's complete box office. They shouldn't be anywhere near good enough to beat City, but how do you think, David, that City will get on basically dealing with him?
Like, John Stones is like, he's in exceptional form. But he's not like, he's not built like a Rio Ferdinand or a John Terry, is he, or a Van Dijk, who's going to Vidic. That kind of like, Diaz, I think, will be able to fight with him. But I can just see Haaland pulling onto Stones, like trying to rough him up. I know it should be a fascinating affair. Like, I remember I was on the show and I was talking about West Ham were playing Manchester City. Like, and I was fascinated to see Antonio go up against Diaz, because like, Antonio must be in the top five strongest footballers in the world. And Haaland has that big, like, he's 6'3", but like he'll be looking at it. Obviously, he'll hear the noises of him. Where's he going? Who's, you know, where should he go? It'll be like a trial. It'll be like a trial match. I think Pep will be looking at him. Mm. Of course, they've mentioned Harry Kane, but I believe Harry Kane is 28 soon. Like Haaland must be what, 2021?
20.
I'm just going to say, don't quote me on the age. But like, his father played for Manchester City. There's that link. He'd have probably been a young boy at the time growing up in Manchester. There'll be that attachment, you know. There will be times when he probably went to watch his father play, maybe, or they went back as a kid, you know. So there will be that affection there. And then he'll be playing against them thinking, like, I want to prove to Pep that I can play in his team.
Yeah. This might sound absolutely ridiculous, but is he a Pep player?
Probably not, no. If you look at the strikers that Pep's always had, like, they're all, okay, he had Zlatan for a while at Barca, but he didn't really play him in the end. They had their fallouts. He's always kind of had a small, like Messi, Villa, you know, that kind of small, Aguero, Jesus, they're all small, quick off the mark. I just think Haaland is like a natural born killer. Like, all he cares about is scoring goals. Like, if he, like, imagine if they were creating the chances, like, at City for him. Like, he'll score the amount of goals he'll score. Like, I saw something recently with him. Yeah. I think it was Monday Night Football. They were comparing Mbappe to Haaland, and his shot conversion rate is like 60% or something stupid like that. Like, whenever he shoots, he nearly scores. Like, that's just...
okay. Okay, David, just, we got to take a break, and Johnny will be back after the news four to talk about the Republic of Ireland against Serbia and the League of Ireland, the new season. Don't go away.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See Dunluey.net.
You're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until 5 o'clock. Just go through some of the scores for you from the FA Cup and the Championship. Earlier on, Southampton reached the semi-finals, a 3-0 win over Bournemouth. Nathan Redmond with 2 goals for the Saints. Everton, Manchester City's got a 5-5 start. 1995, the last time Everton won a trophy, which was the FA Cup against Manchester United. And the Premier League, Brighton against Newcastle, an 8 o'clock start. In the Championship, full-time, Brentford 1, Nottingham Forest 1. Half-time scores, Barnsley 0, Sheffield Wednesday 1. It's Bristol City 0, Rotherham 1. It's Coventry City 0, Wycombe Wanderers 0. Millwall 1, Middlesbrough 0. Norwich 0, Blackburn Rovers 0, Preston 0, Luton Town 0, Reading 0, QPR 1, it's Stoke City 0, Derby County 0, Watford 1, Birmingham City 0, a 5-5 start between Swansea City and Cardiff City. These are the scores from the Championship in Scotland. Dundee United 0, Aberdeen 0, Hamilton 0, St Mirren 1, it's Kilmarnock 1, Motherwell 1, Livingston 1, Hibernian 1, and St Johnstone 0, Ross County 0. In the rugby, 52-10, Scotland lead Italy. How long can we really have Italy in the Six Nations going forward? Because it's getting embarrassing at this stage. 4:45 kickoff, Ireland, England at Lansdowne Road. Checking in with Andy Dunn shortly ahead of the big Six Nations decider for a third or fourth place in Dublin. A bit of money. That's where it's going at the moment. Daniel McDonald, how are you?
I'm good, John.
And we're joined by Dan, David Myler, the former Republic of Ireland international, and Johnny Ward for Football Between Now and Five, in association with Paddy Power. So for more information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie. Dan, you're on the League of Ireland circus, the chicken and chips.
Chicken and chips, yeah. Well, I don't know if there's any chicken and chips with COVID now, John, to be honest. I'm not sure if there's any kind of food. No, I'm down in Sligo. Sligo Dundalk this evening at 6 o'clock, so I'm just outside the show grounds. I'm watching players, obviously can't travel together to games, so I'm watching some players. Some of their overseas Sligo players are getting dropped off in taxis here or whatever it might be. The season obviously started back last night, and it's back to a degree of normality. But as I keep saying to people, you know, Sligo is a very well supported team, particularly, you know, in the area. And you're coming to Sligo, you come off the motorway, you're off the sort of dual carriageway in, you turn left up to the showgrounds. And normally on a match night, there's visible sign of people all around the place and the feel that there's a game on, the season starting. And there's obviously none of that with games behind closed doors. So it's not an original point, but it's still one that sort of jars a bit. Haven't been over here in a while. Normally one of the best things about it is the stadium very close to the town. You can see people walking up and walking out, but not the case this time.
Are they on top of all the protocols that they need to be?
Oh, yeah, they are, yeah. Like, I mean, it's I haven't been in yet, but I mean, all the clubs have, you know, did this last season for the second half of the season or whatever, you know, the abridged season. And to be honest, the league did a pretty good job of it. They managed themselves pretty well. So, yes, they are. It's a routine at this stage that they all go through. And, you know, the players are all arriving, getting out of taxis and masks and whatever, you know, they're doing whatever it is that they need to do. I mean, I assume, you know, Dundalk will travel down now and, you know, the away team has to have a bigger bus and distance, or in some cases even there was two buses and teams. But yeah, that's what you have to do. I mean, there's a lot of scrutiny on the league, you know, coming back. Obviously, you know, there was that, you know, Intercounty GAA is sort of not back in the scene, and you know, there's obviously, really, you know, the primary reason is that, you know, this is players' livelihoods, you know, this is their job. There's also like a smaller number of teams involved as well too, which definitely helped. But as a result, they have to do everything right, because if the league is responsible for some kind of issue or outbreak, then you know, there'll potentially be a lot of, you know, damage done. So everyone has to be on point with what they've done, and hopefully that remains the case.
I'm ashamed to say I've never been to the showgrounds. That's something I need to put right when fans are let back in. You were in Drogheda last night, Drogheda against Kevin Sheedy's Waterford.
Yeah, a bit of a weird one, really. Just, I mean, the interest in the game was, I mean, it's Kevin Sheedy. It's you know, here's the man who scored Ireland's first ever goal in a World Cup. He's 61, and he's never managed. He's never taken a full time senior managing job. He pointed out, I mean, he was a caretaker briefly at Tranmere, and he's worked in football for most of his time since he stopped playing. Like, but it's sort of a, you know, he was a under sort of 23 or under 21 coach, but he's sort of never actually gone out and managed on his own. And it's sort of striking how you know, Waterford in recent years had first John Sheridan, and now they've gone for him. And yeah, it's they lost 1-0. It was a difficult start. He had 9 new signings. Again, you know, most of them hadn't been in Ireland a couple of weeks ago. We have a couple of Brian Murphy, who's been around the beat, been around Ireland squads. Daryl Murphy came off the bench, very recognisable name. And then some other guys who are you haven't seen them. They have Mike Newell on the sideline, another Premier League years name that people might remember. And he was sent off. But it's very early days for Kevin Sheedy, yeah.
Let's get, we'll come back to the League of Ireland and just kind of to analyse where the league is at and who the contenders are and who the players who you should be looking out for the remainder of the season. But obviously we have a huge game on Wednesday against Serbia, the first World Cup qualifier for Stephen Kenny-Davis. And what's more important, is it players that are names and are talented that have been warming the bench? I'm thinking of Callum Robinson here, has not been playing for West Brom. Or is it more important, and obviously it's different positions, to be rewarding the players like Alan Brown or Jason Knight that have been getting regular game time?
I think a player, it's very hard for a player who's not been playing regularly at his club to come in and be able to put in a performance, you know, at international level. You might get the one-offs where lads come in. I've done it myself in times where I haven't been playing and I've come and I've actually played for Ireland. You can muster up a performance, but I wasn't inevitably a game changer. I wasn't a forward who had to be, you know, in tip-top shape. I mean, need to be alert and all that. So like I would look at, certainly the lads who have been playing regularly at their clubs will have, you know, one hand on the shirt. But obviously, once they come in and they arrive into training camp, Stephen will, I imagine, look, they'll meet up, get their first session underway Monday. He'll get a fair idea of where players are at. So I think it'll be more a case of how lads train leading into the game. They'll just have to hit the ground running. And it's almost like going and pressing. If you look at in the last campaign, I think it was in now November, October, there were certain players who weren't in the initial, you know, 20, whatever it was, 25, 26, 27-man squad, who got drafted in because of the COVID stuff, who actually ended up playing. So that would strike me that Stephen will judge players off training. So if lads come in and they perform well in training, they'll get the nod. So I think, like, as much as I can say, I feel the ones who have been playing regularly should get the nod, it'll certainly come down to how they perform in training.
Let's just hear from Kevin Coban, who was on the football show with Richie McCormack on Thursday night. He says there's no way Seamus Coleman does not get the nod on Stephen Kenny's side for the upcoming World Cup qualifiers.
he's not going to change his system, is he? He's not going to change it. He's going to go with the back four. That's how he likes to play, 4-3-3. That's how I would see Kenny playing. That's how I would imagine he's going to play long term. If it was going to be a four-man midfield, a 4-4-2 or 4-4-1-1, however you're going to go about it, I think you could get Coleman and Doherty into the side. But the first name on my team sheet would absolutely... I mean, again, Coleman's had injuries, so let's monitor him, see how he is as well recently. But Coleman would be my absolute number one pick every single time. He's been the captain for a long time. I felt it was a mistake from Stephen Kenny when he named his first side and he picked Doherty ahead of Seamus Coleman. As a back four, as I said, it was nothing to do on the ability. Some might argue that Matt Doherty's been playing better. He's never played as a natural right back consistently going into that game when Stephen Kenny picked a back four. He's always played as wing back. Yes, he's been playing in a back four at Spurs, absolutely has. But when he's played the majority of his career at Wolves, absolutely was in a back five or back three, midfield five, or however you want to go about it. So as a back four, as an out-and-out right-back, Seamus Coleman is a better player in my eyes. And he's the captain. He's been a captain for a long time. He brings so much to the squad, to the team. He is the real leader that's within that side. And that cannot ever be overlooked, what he brings to that team for his leadership skills, for his personality. Coleman is the number one pick every single time in my eyes. And, you know, that's how I would go about it. He's going to pick a back four. Coleman should play every time, I think, yeah.
David, you know Seamus Coleman, you're a friend of his, and he might play for Everton against Manchester City in the FA Cup this evening, and the Toffees hoping to get through to the semi-finals. You're talking about characters and dressing rooms and leadership. Like, from that perspective, we need it more than ever now, and that's why he's the first name in the team sheet.
Well, he should be the first name nearly anyway, shouldn't he? He's captain.
Yeah.
No, I definitely think, like, when it's been tough in games, I think that's where you rely on people like Seamus. He doesn't go hiding. He's not afraid to, you know, pull someone, you know, by the collar to say, like, come on, I need more. Or he's not, you know, to give someone an arm around them to encourage them. Definitely, I agree with Kevin in the sense that we know that Stephen's going to play back four. And Seamus is better defensively than Matt. Matt is probably better than Seamus at going forward when he gets into those final, you know, final third, into those attacking areas. But if we're going to be defensive at times, it would prefer Seamus to play. And I think the big thing with that is if Seamus plays, he'll give a lot of confidence to Duffy. They're very close. And it's the kind of, you know, Seamus knows how to speak to him. They've been, like, you know, all the way through at Everton, younger age or whatever, they played together. Certainly when they broke into the first team, I know Seamus went off then towards Blackburn and did his own thing. But they've always been that kind of mainstay too with Ireland, that Seamus will give Duffy a lot of confidence. And if Stephen is going to go into Seamus, I'd play Duffy alongside him, because I think that would be, Seamus will help him out massively.
What is your team then for Wednesday, David? What is your starting 11? Try not to put you on the spot now here.
Obviously, you know, Darren's out, so you go Quiveen, I'd go Seamus, I'd go Duffy, I'd go Clark, Enda Stevens, Howard and Knight, Brown. I'd play Matt Doherty up wide right. I'd play James Collins through the middle. And I'd go with McLean.
And not Aaron Connolly?
No. Well, James is touch and go, but knowing James as well as I know James will somehow find himself fit. Like, if you remember back, I was only talking to someone about it the other day. If you remember back to the Austria game where James scored, we beat Austria 1-0 away. James actually had an epidural before the game to play. So that will tell you the level, you know, the length James will go to play for Ireland. So James will be fit and James will be ready to play. Don't worry about James.
What's your thinking behind your selection, David?
I think Matt will provide good balance on the right-hand side. Obviously, I'm kind of looking at him like, as in, I don't want him to be too high and wide. Like, not like, you know, the kind of... where we can easily transition into a 4-5-1. I would look at Alan Brown to get up alongside James Collins. You know, he's good legs. I think Conor Howard's in fantastic form. I think Jason Knight, of course, I think he's only missed one derby game. Obviously Rooney has made him captain, whatever, and I think he's in good form. They've had a turn since Rooney's gone. So I think, Jason Malumbi's been unfortunate that it hasn't really worked out for him at Preston. He's not played a lot. Of course, there's Josh Cullen is another one. He's out in Anderlecht. Of course, look, I don't see much of their football, so I don't know exactly how well he's getting on. I think Aaron has been very hot and cold with Brighton. Obviously, he's had some incidents off the pitch which haven't helped him. And I just feel with James Collins, he's kind of that mainstay, big target man. I touched on there why I'd play Duffy alongside Seamus. And of course, Kieran Clark has been playing regularly for Newcastle, and he's my former roommate and one of my closest friends, so I have to give him the nod. And I think Ender really picks himself.
Johnny, what's your team?
It's not going to be great, whatever it is, whether I pick it or Stephen Kenny picks it, to be honest. And, he's looking at it today. Collins isn't playing for Luton. He's seemingly just lost his place at the moment. And Malumbi's not playing, even though Brown is spinning for Brighton. So we have a couple of key players maybe not coming in the best of shape. And my team is kind of obviously dependent on these lads even being fit, which is, I believe, is still a concern for Kelleher. But Kelleher to start, I think Coleman will start. I'd be surprised if he didn't, to be honest. My central two would be O'Shea and Clark. Be interested to hear what Dan made at the press conference that Kenny was saying during the week. I didn't get the vibe that he was filling me with confidence that he was going to start Duffy, which is understandable. I go with O'Shea and Clark Stevens left back. Something like a 4-2-3-1 then. So the 2-3-1 would be Hurren and Hendrick, maybe with Knight on the right, O'Dowda on the left, with Brown behind Collins. I don't think Connolly would be fit enough to play. And even if he were fit enough, is he good enough at this time to do the hold-up job? Questionable. Is Collins good enough? Probably not. If he's not getting on Luton, for whom he scored, I think he's gotten 7 goals or so this season, but we just don't have anyone else really. Now, I could be, I'd say it's odds on the three of us will all get the team wrong, because it's very hard to call. And you look at Cullen apparently has been doing very well over in Belgium. The reports are good about him. Robinson hasn't really been playing. Am I confident of my midfield? Not necessarily, but that's basically the best I could come up with. Whatever the best Ireland can come up with is going to be hard to call, though.
Listeners, get your text in 53106 on what your team would should be against Serbia on Wednesday. Dan, knowing Stephen Kenny as you do, what sense do you have, or would you have a sense at the moment what he's likely to do?
Yeah, so I was wondering, are we doing the team we want or the team we think? And there might be two different things there, in some respects. I think it's going to be borderline. Yeah, Johnny, he did do a press conference the other day, Stephen Kenny. It was broken into sections. Some of it hasn't come out yet. He might have dealt with Shane Duffy a bit more then, so I'm not going to get myself in trouble by preempting it too much. But I think it's fair to say, I think it's in the balance with Shane Duffy. I think David makes a very good point about the relationship with Coleman, who I think will definitely play. If he's fit, absolutely no doubt. I think Coleman will play this time, and I think there's every very strong chance that Matt Doherty will play ahead of him. The Duffy one I think is really borderline. I don't want to be unkind to Shane Duffy. He's had a really really difficult time, and I'm actually torn between the view of, is it more damaging him to for Ireland to drop him, and then he's been dropped by Ireland, he's not been picked by Celtic, or is it a case that this is a really big game in this window? The next set of competitive games isn't until September. Is there almost a sense of, do you take him out of the firing line now, and is that the right thing to do, in terms of the overall campaign? I don't know what David would think, the player's perspective on that. Have you ever been so low that I feel no player would say he didn't want to play for Ireland? Of course not. It's a ridiculous thing to say, but that the best thing for you, if your confidence was low at a particular point of time. I may come back to my team in a second, but I don't know, David. I just think it's a delicate one with Duffy, that obviously you don't want to hurt him more if you think he's a big player by not picking him. But is the right thing by him to do to maybe take him out of it? Because if he's a bad game, then I don't know, does it make it worse? It's a balancing act.
No, 100% you're right. And I think Shane will be desperate himself to turn his own form around the club level. But then when you kind of, you come away with Ireland, there's that sense of pride playing for your country. You're going back to meet up with, the group of Irish lads. You look like he'll be looking forward to this. Obviously, I know they've got Rangers this weekend, regardless of that, whether he plays or he doesn't. He'll have a buzz of going away. Even I remember the times when we lost games in the league and then you'd fly over to Ireland. There was a great buzz, because you were going in to see fresh faces. And you're right in the way that if Stephen wasn't to... it's a tough one, because if he doesn't handle it well, maybe does he need to sit down with Shane Sunday evening when they meet up and say, look, this is what I'm thinking, and then see how he performs in training. Obviously, we won't be privy to that. We won't know. But if he'll need to have a conversation with him to see where he's at, you know, in his mental space or whatever, because not only Shane's important to Ireland, you know, you look at it, he defensively and offensively on set pieces, everything, you know, there's no one else like him. And regardless, if we can get him to tidy up, maybe, I don't know, limit it, just say, just play it out, just defend. Because if you look at it, like Serbia, like if Mitrovic plays, if you remember back to when Fulham played West Brom, that's why I've kind of gone with Duffy. Like Mitrovic gave Dar O'Shea a tough time. Now Dar is young and he's learning his trade. I've no problem with that. And he's going to have tough tests along, and he'll only improve to get better. And I've no doubt he'll be an excellent player for Ireland over, you know, the next, I don't know, 6, 7 years or whatever, 10 years. But there is that knowledge of, like, and that experience of Duffy and Clark together. It's that kind of safety blanket around Duffy that can calm him down, encourage him, and get the best out of him. Like, I do think that Shames will be massive. And even Kieran Clark, someone who's played, like, if you go back to the Euros in 16, those were the, you know, after the opening two games, that was the pairing. Going into the France game, it was Clarkey and Tinglick. So it will be interesting to see what Stephen does do. But I think he needs to have a conversation to get an idea. Maybe he already has had that conversation. I don't know.
Okay. We've got to take a break. I'm sorry, guys. We will be back with this after the break. But we need to take a break now. 5-3-1-0-6. Josh Cullen is the best defensive midfielder we've had in 10 years. Reports from Anderlecht are more than good. More like superb. Must start, says Rory in Leitrim. And Haran has to play nearer the front. Restricted playing deeper. Always has a goal in them, says Cahill from Cork. Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk is back after these.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunluey.net.
Let's go back to the lads. David Myler, Dan McDonald, Johnny Ward. Our football coverage brought to you thanks to Paddy Power. For more information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie. You were speaking, Daniel, about the team just before we had to go to the ads there. I'm kind of curious what Stephen Kenny's going to do in the middle of the field. Harrahan's been playing well. Knight's been a regular. Adam Brown is nearly starting every game for Preston. It's going to be an interesting conundrum and decision for Stephen Kenny.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think, you know, Josh Cullen is definitely very much in the debate, but the one thing that should be stressed is that he plays on Sunday night, and this for Anderlecht, and this game is Wednesday. And I just wonder, will that count against them? I honestly think, you know, the way people have been talking in the general discussion, that if that wasn't the case, I think you'd have a bit of a shout. But I think I'd be very strongly expecting Cullen to play against Luxembourg on the Saturday. I just think maybe Sunday to Wednesday, it just means, you know, he'll only be in recovery on Monday, I'm guessing, you know. And just like Stephen Kenny has a very limited period of time with his players, but knowing the way he prepares, I don't think he'd want to be in a situation where he's like, he likes to do 11v11 stuff and training and that type of thing. I'm not sure if he wants to be in a situation where he can't really look at his proposed team, you know, on that Monday and properly, and even on Tuesday. So I think that could be an issue with Cullen. So I think that's then you're going into like the other position. I think Harrahan will definitely play. It's interesting, like David talks about Harrahan and Jason Knight and Brown. And I can see that. I think the debate with Knight is, and you know, I've been asking opinions of this, like where does he play within the midfield? You know, because often with Derby, it seems like, and I haven't seen a huge amount of him, but he's sometimes a bit more advanced. And if he's in, say, the two, in the 4-2-3-1, if you want to look at it that way, like, and he's a box-to-box type player, are you then asking Conor Harrahan to do a lot of more defensive work and defensive responsibility? And does that neutralise something that Conor Harrahan brings? Or does that then, do you then look at narrow options, like if Matt Doherty's on the right, and I don't know what situation, James McLean, I'm sure, will be there if he can. Are you then looking for them to sort of, you know, to shuffle inside and give Ireland a bit of cover and ensure that they're not outnumbered as they sometimes have been? So I think the balance is a big question there, because Harrahan and Malumbi had played together a few times and I thought they'd actually built half an understanding, but Knight is obviously the form player. So I think Harrahan plays, right? I think he definitely plays. And then it's between Brown, Hendrick, Malumbi, and Knight, and it's like, so which two of them do you play? And as a result of that, which combination of those three is the best, you know? And that's what I'm not sure. I think if James McCarthy was there, I think that's why he likes McCarthy. I think that's why McCarthy would always be if he was fine, a first choice, because then he gives you that sort of that defensively minded player to some degree, and you can experiment a bit with what you put around him. So I don't know. I don't know what David thinks as the, you know, as someone who's played in the different combinations of a midfield. What do you need? And from Connor's point of view, how does he play as a more, I hate the, you know, but as a six relative to maybe in a slightly more attacking role like he is at Swansea?
I get the point where you're coming from. I think that Knight and Howarden, if Stephen has talked about this possession-based thing, and I think Connor, we've often seen drops deep to get on the ball, and at times, like I remember I spoke to him after one of the games, like you need to get yourself more forward. Connor would like to go and get in the ball. Of course, there's that defensive issue then that none of them are, like you said, an outright six. But I definitely do feel that the three of those could play, and there would be opportunities that if Brown, just say if we go with the three I said of Knight, Brown and Howarden, that if Brown doesn't get forward, one of the other two, and there can be kind of like a bit of inter movement with them in rotation. I think it could benefit us because three are very tidy on the ball, and will take the ball, of course. Then there is a case, I suppose, for Jeff. Jeff could be the one to play the deep line one, to kind of like, you know, almost start off the attacks, getting the ball off the fullbacks of the centre halves to kind of be that link play. But I don't. If he works on it during the week, I definitely think we can. You don't have to play an outright six. And if Stephen wants to play a possession base, it's better to probably have better ball players. Like James, like you said, is a massive loss, because he can do both sides of the game. I definitely think like you could certainly find a way to have Howard and Knight and obviously speak to them. Look, I know, say, Connor's, you know, experienced enough. He's been through all the leagues. He's been around for a long time. He knows what it takes to play as a holding six. And certainly with Jason, I think he's young, he's energetic. Like, look, could go with Josh Cullen. Like you speak about there, of course, look, he's playing Sunday night. But a lot of these lads nowadays are playing Saturday, Tuesdays, which is the same flip as a Sunday, Wednesday, of course. Look, he's going to have to travel over to Ireland, which is another difficulty. But you can bet, you know, your dollar bill that if he's given the opportunity and Stephen says to him, how do you feel? He'll be putting his hand up saying, I want to play, because it's a huge opportunity and it's like it's a new campaign. He'll want to play. So it will be interesting to see which way he goes.
It's an important week for Dean Kiely with the goalkeepers, isn't it, David? Like, Kevin Kelleher, hopefully he'll be fit, but he might not be. There could be Mark Travers then. Dean has got a baptism of fire, just straight into it.
Yeah, but sure, look, I often say this, all he needs to do is tell them how to tie their gloves and kick the ball up the pitch and catch the ball. That's all they need to do with the goalkeepers.
Money for all rope.
Hey, look, Dean has been around God knows how long. Whether he was playing for Ireland, you look at him, I believe he's been at Palace now a good number of years with Roy Hodgson. He'd be well experienced, he'll know what it takes. And these lads, albeit there are, you know, the four of them are very young, you know, they can probably learn a lot from Dean. And obviously he'll be excited coming in. I don't believe certainly in my time, he's never been involved as a goalkeeping coach. So it's a fresh challenge for him. He'll be excited, and do you know what I mean? He'll want to. The great thing is these are all four young goalkeepers who are, you know, at the start of their careers. It's not like he won't be able to teach Darren a lot, you know, if Darren was there. But these young lads are, you know, fresh, they're young, they're inexperienced, so he can come in and you know, he can encourage them, help them, and certainly improve them. So it'll be good to see. And like, look, whichever keeper, we know Quiveen, I believe what I've heard is that he's back training with Liverpool. How much training he's doing, I don't know, but certainly whichever one of them does play, they can learn a lot from Dean in the time that they work together.
And a caller, Team 33 presenter here, gave his team 4-3-3 with a false nine. Kelleher, Coleman, O'Shea, Clark, Stevens, Malumbi, Knight and Cullen, Horgan, Brady and Connolly. And we also had Mark Lamb. Can Rachel Blackmore play up front? It's our only hope. Which is kind
I
of
think,
that.
I think, John, I think Enda's team there would be one of the shortest Irish teams in history, I think, wouldn't it? I think you'd be hoping that the Serbians weren't good on set pieces, you know, then you'd be in a bit of a... But a bother. Apparently, Anthony Barry, one of his big things is the set pieces, but he can't make lads taller. I think that would be a slight issue. It'd be good to watch, but I'm not sure if that's the game that we'd be going with that combination.
Just on Serbia, Dan, what do we feel their strengths are? We know Tadic, we know Mitrovic, we know these types of players, but a lot of the players we don't know. How strong are they? They were knocked out of the Euros by Scotland in the playoff.
Yeah, the knockout by Scotland on penalties. The expression I've heard is, you know, that Scotland did a job on them. I only saw extra time of that game. I remember watching them in a penalty shootout. And then, you know, prior to that, like, they've been hot and cold. Like, they're under new management as well. Like, this is Stojkovic's first game.
Legend. Yeah.
Legendary figure. His first game in charge. So you know what it's like when there's a new manager bounce. They are quite strong in the forward department. I think they have like 6 to 8 options sort of that are playing regularly across, you know, sort of decent leagues in Europe. They have a couple of guys in Italy doing reasonably well. They've just been a bit hot and cold in recent years, you know, and they're sort of a, like, they're also facing into this window from their perspective where they're playing Ireland and then they're playing Portugal, you know. So we're obviously talking about, this has been a huge game for Ireland in the context of the campaign, but Serbia, with this, the nature of this group, would have just been 8 games, and then you have to play the odd game against Qatar in there. Like, this is a big window for them, you know, and they're, you know, there's a lot going to happen in a short space of time in this group. Like, in September, Ireland play a triple header of games, including Portugal and Serbia. So it's very much about the bounce off the new manager. He's more so going towards younger players. I mean, Matic has retired. A couple of other players have stepped away. But there seems to be a feeling that it's a team that when they click on a good day, I mean, I think they hammered Russia in a game, you know, 5-0 in recent memory, that when their forward players click, you know, they can be very dangerous. But Scotland, it appeared, and I think it's probably something that Ireland will be looking at, you know, Scotland did do a reasonably good job on them in that game, and that they weren't like just, you know, wasn't bodies behind the ball. Apparently they had a decent plan, they executed reasonably well, they frustrated them. It's closed doors football. You know, you talk about Caoimhín Kelleher there, and to be honest, I've no, it's actually a real compliment to Caoimhín Kelleher. I wouldn't be that worried about him at all, because he's been through, you know, playing for Liverpool in high end like games. But you would be thinking, oh God, going to Belgrade, hostile atmosphere, first game for your country, you know, communication, all this. But of course, that issue isn't there. It's closed doors football now. So that probably blunts some of the tough place to go to narrative that you would have about this game. So, yeah, I think we're expecting them to be decent. But because it's a new manager, there seems to be some debate over what way he might go with some of his personnel decisions, whether even Mitrovic will play as one of the debates, for example.
We don't have a lot of time with Stephen Kenny and Anthony Barry to go through the incident, Keith Andrews with the team. Do they need a lot of time, David, from international camps? How are you feeling about Wednesday? Are you more hopeful than confident, or do you think we can get a result?
I'll always think we can get a result. I believe in the squad of players. It's going to be tough, of course. Like you said, the good thing is Stephen's had the previous camps to work with them. Obviously, Andy Barry's coming in. He's new. Do you know how much action he'll have in the first few days will be interesting to hear. But certainly, you know, I imagine he'll play his role, play his part. But Stephen has like started the foundation with this group of players. So it'll be just kind of the same messages, I imagine. So look, I'm hoping we won't put in a performance to get a result. It's going to be very tough. Of course, thing is, we don't know what Serbia is going to turn up and play. Like Dan said there, they've got a new manager, so it'll be interesting. But certainly I'm confident that we can get a result, yeah.
Johnny, how are you feeling about it?
Not particularly optimistic in light of all the problems we have. And I think if you take the two games, obviously Dan said there, what faced Serbia, you know, we have a massive game against Luxembourg, and the flip side of Belgrade being of no real, you know, disadvantage to Ireland. And I think that is very, very important. Lanzarote is no fear. Luxembourg will come here with no fear whatsoever as well. And, you know, our mentality will be a product somewhat of what happens in Belgrade, because we're going into the game in the back of a bad run of results and the inability to score a goal. So if that continues on, obviously confidence will suffer. I think it's a massive, massive, massive game for Stephen Kenny, this game. I think it could have a large bearing on where he goes as the Ireland manager, which I think is unfortunate because so many things have gone against him. But for the future of Irish football, I really, really hope we get a draw here at the very worst. I'm not particularly confident.
Just briefly, Dan, I just got a text in here. What are your thoughts on Jim Crawford confirming the under-21 manager that Hetafe midfielder John Joe Patrick Finn wants to play for Ireland?
Yeah, well, I suppose it's the first stage, because he hasn't played internationally for anyone. So the caveat is, you know, like it's a great sign so far, but obviously you can play competitively for one country at underage and then potentially switch. But, you know, it's funny, I know Nathan Murphy's dad has a connection, doesn't he, with the Finn family, and you know, his claims do seem like, you know, there's obviously a very strong emotional attachment. His dad passed away, and you would think that it's a very positive sign that he's at this stage, like, he's, you know, he had a few options and he's opted to come in and commit. So you hope, you know, you hope this is encouraging. Interesting under 21 squad, actually. I mean, I know it's only a friendly they're playing next week, and I'm not sure how many, like, what type of attendance they'll actually have ultimately with COVID in the end. But there's Connor Noss as well in Germany, with a bunch of Gladbach, and then some interesting players closer to home. But yeah, it's an encouraging sign. Like, when Crawford spoke about it last month, when Finn has come off the bench for Getafe, he's been sort of more so as a wide player. But I think, like, Stephen Kenny was involved. I think, you know, all the underage coaches were involved. They've said to him, listen, he wants to come and play centre midfield. It feels like they're going to facilitate that at underage level. So they're going to come in and give him a chance in his favourite position. And we'll see. I'd be bluffing if I said I knew, we've seen anything of him. I mean, I haven't. So, if this game, if we can see him play for the 21s in a central position, and he's playing first team football in the Spanish top flight, it'd be great to watch him.
Dan McDonald, Johnny Ward and David Myler, let's hope by the next time we speak, Ireland have kicked off this World Cup campaign with a couple of wins. Take care, lads.
Cheers, lads.
Thanks, Shady.
Thanks.
And the lads there. Let's get an update on the rugby. England and Ireland, Lansdowne Road in the Six Nations. Andy Dunn.
Yeah, well, it's John, it's 6 minutes into the game. It's nil all. It's a bit like a boring heavyweight boxing match so far. Just both teams sizing each other up and throwing a few light jabs. There's been very little play of significance. A little bit of aimless kicking, which seems to be in fashion at the moment, and not all fashion is stylish, as we know. So it's been not a great spectacle for the first 6 minutes. Error strewn from both sides. The game really between the two 10-yard lines on either half of the midfield or the halfway line. So far, nothing special, but it's very early days, only 6.5 minutes into the game.
Okay, Andy Dunn there on Ireland and England at Lansdowne Road. No score yet. Just to give you some full times from England and the football. Bournemouth 0, Southampton 3. So Southampton into the FA Cup semi-finals. Everton against Manchester City at 5:30. Full time in the Championship. Brentford 1, Nottingham Forest 1. Latest scores: Barnsley 1, Sheffield Wednesday 2. Bristol City 0, Rotherham 2. It's Coventry 0, Wickham 0. Entering now the closing stages: Millwall 1, Middlesbrough 0. It is Norwich 1, Blackburn Rovers 1. Preston 0, Luton Town 1. Reading 1, QPR 1. Stoke 1, Derby 0. Watford 3, Birmingham City 0. The scores from the Championship in England. Don't forget, Off the Ball Sunday, 1-7. Monaghan's finest, Shane Hannon, will be in the chair presenting tomorrow. Stephen Doyle and Brian Kerr calling the shots for the West Ham United Arsenal Premier League game. So live and exclusive commentary of that here on News Talk and Off the Ball. George Hamilton and Rory O'Connor picking out the best stories in the Sunday paper review from 1:30. We'll also hear from the Irish hockey stars, Chloe Watkins and Katie Mullen. Going to be a brilliant show. Make sure to tune in. If you missed our important Saturday panel conversation on racism in sport and in society with Darren Randolph, Jason Churlock and Des Tomlinson, or any of OTB Football Saturday with David Myler, Dan McDonald and Johnny Ward, you can be able to find the podcasts of the content on the brand new OTB Sports app. Search OTB Sports in your app store now to download it if you haven't already, or check out the content wherever you get your pods. Thanks so much for listening this afternoon. We'll speak soon. Bye-bye.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.